This is Berto Munoz from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, here to say, just do your shit.
It's Friday, and it's 7 p.m., which means it's time for the Inciting Incident Podcast, supported by our patrons and available on Libsyn, Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Android, LiveJournal, Google+, The Hard Harry Show, News Radio, WHP 580, Rock and Emily's Bed Radios that are somehow appropriate for children that age, Most Tin Cans Connected with String, Tumblr, Snapchat, Zanga, LimeWire, WinMX, Napster. We'll have to spell it with two Y's there to escape Big Brother. The DCI, the Enchantment Under the Sea Dance, the Plate and Pete and Pete's Mother's Head, and any other podcast app that somehow escaped this list. And now, here's your host, Al Lehman.
Good evening. My cell phone just went off. That must mean it's Friday night and it's time for Inciting Incident. This episode is pre-recorded because I'm having more fun than I would be talking to you. I'm Al Lehman, and joining me is a wide variety of interesting people that you all should be familiar with. First of all, Brian the Fuzzy, welcome back.
More fun than a barrel of several particularly whimsical monkeys.
Yes, and we will be in the same house at this time. But there will probably be more booze involved than there is right now.
You have my attention, sir.
I know. That's my plot. And joining us once again is Astrid. Welcome back.
Thank you. I'm sorry to the listeners. These guys like me for some reason.
Yeah. What the hell are we thinking? And joining us once again, the first three-time guest. Astrid would count, but she's not a guest anymore. Greg T. Reich. Welcome back, Greg.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely.
It's in the contract.
What would Friday night be without someone explaining awesome things in the way that only he can, and then, of course, bringing up too many awesome points to fit within our time constraints? So we didn't want to pick a topic because we're lazy. So I'm going to start off with some of the things you've been posting about and some of the things we were talking about before the air, because you may find this hard to believe. We actually talked before we start recording.
Imagine.
Greg, you were starting to talk about Jill Stein a little bit. And since we haven't covered anything in this election outside of fuck Trump, I'd be really interested in hearing about what you were beginning to elaborate on.
Well, the big thing about Jill Stein lately, there's so many memes going around, so much attention being paid on social media about to Jill Stein. And if you look at the polls, she's only at 4%. She's way behind any other candidate. Gary Johnson's around 10%, and Trump and Clinton are separated by anywhere from 4 to 10%, depending on the polls, and Clinton's ahead in every one of them right now. And everybody's beating on Jill Stein for some reason and giving her all kinds of attention. And why? Just why? Why is she a threat to everyone?
Now, what if some of these memes surround it? Is it just because of the supposed anti-vaxxer thing? Is it because of the whole a vote for Stein is a vote for Trump thing?
I would argue the anti-vaxxer stuff is not supposed, but go on.
You know what I mean.
Yeah.
Well, okay. The anti-vaxxer stuff. She's been wishy-washy on vaccines, it seems. I've read statements of hers that said, of course, she supports vaccines. Her problem is with the government putting the industry in charge of regulating it, which, if you'll recall, the Bush administration liked to do that. They like to put people in the industry in charge of the things, in charge of regulating the things that they were, they made money off of, they made profit off of, still had stock in. So, you know, and she, but she said some things that aren't so good. She's not an anti-vaxxer, but she panders to them. Okay, let's put it that way. And anti-vaxxers are dangerous to society. We know this. Okay, the outbreak of measles in Ohio came from anti-vaxxer people. Well, who were they? They were the Amish. The Amish anti-vaxxers won't vaccinate anything, won't take anything from the world, you know. And they ended up going to a mission to the Philippines and ended up getting measles, and they brought them back, and that is where the outbreak came from. And there have been outbreaks in California of things that we have vaccines for. And that is understandable. I understand people not wanting to vote for Jill Stein for pandering to that crowd. I get it. But she's a non-entity in the election. She's always put up against statements from Clinton or statements from Trump or statements from whoever. And it doesn't matter. She's not on that playing field. If she was going to be in the debates there to defend herself, I could get behind that kind of thing and behind that kind of criticism. But right now, it's all snippets. And speaking on the vaccine thing, the Washington Post had an article that was that had a title that was very inflammatory and very damning of Jill Stein. And in that same article, in like the second to last paragraph, it had Jill Stein's actual statement on vaccines, where she said, of course she's a doctor, of course she supports vaccines. She just doesn't want the whole thing that I just, you know, said that I began this with, you know, that she doesn't want the industry in charge of the regulation. So people are beating up on Jill Stein for this Washington Post headline, not even her actual words, a headline. And put up against that headline was Hillary Clinton saying, I support vaccines, hashtag grandmothers know best. They didn't put Jill Stein's quote. They put a inflammatory headline against that statement. So, but why is Jill Stein such a threat to Clinton supporters? I don't even think Clinton's talking about her.
She's not.
And of course, you talking about Bush putting people in charge of the thing that they were in the industry of course, harkens back to the days that Mike Brown was put in charge of the horses in Katrina that were being damaged and being pulled out. So Bush was always good at appointing people to the appropriate position. I always found.
Well, I would argue that's not the point that I heard. I think the point that I heard was sort of a condemnation that anybody within the industry should not be associated with the regulation of that industry, and I'm not certain that I necessarily agree with that wholeheartedly. I mean, it's one thing to, if corruption is confirmed, you know, to prosecute as it stands, but I would hope that whoever would be put in charge of regulation has some insider knowledge as to the workings of the business in order to function. That's a basic tenet of delegation,
right? And I was just a Bush joke.
I know
it's been too long.
I know, but I've been sitting here kind of going what for the last couple of minutes, just listening to Greg talk, and I suppose I get your point about picking on Jill Stein. I mean, I made this comment to you before we went on the air that I think it's just the fact that she exists. I mean, she's as much of an entity, and I'll speak in the broadest terms possible for that statement, an entity, like a face in the presidential race as Gary Johnson. So as long as she is sort of in the public sphere getting talked about as somebody that prospective people will vote for, I think that, no, she absolutely is on that level of a Clinton or a Trump because she's made herself part of this conversation. But I can understand sort of the frustration about like the hostility towards her. I got to imagine it's got to be like any sort of challenge to the status quo, that general reaction that most people have about anything, whether it's politics or fandom, as well as the fact that because she's such a non-entity, it's far more easier to punch down on her than to try and punch down on Trump. Although we have a lot of fun punching down on Trump anyway. So
what are you talking about? We have never done such things.
I can't imagine.
Astrid?
Well,
Astrid, go ahead. I know you've been trying to get in there a little bit.
Well, my first thing that I wanted to mention has gotten sidetracked, but I just want to say I'm severely confused about how the Amish go on mission trips, but I'm just ignorant to that type of thing, I suppose. My big qualm with Jill Stein is not necessarily Jill Stein's fault. It's the platform of the Green Party itself that is fucking maddening to me. Like, they present themselves as, like, the more ethical alternative, like, white hat, we're the good guys. But their platform dehumanizes people in professions that I am also in. They actively seek to harm us with their policies. So it's my hatred towards Jill Stein, not necessarily her, but she is part of a thing I have a huge fucking problem with.
That's fair.
Well, if it's any comfort to you, the Green Party has never had their shit together.
they're basically the hippie party, right?
Well, they like to whine about how both the major parties are the same. And that is pretty much all they do. They never push their platform. They're disorganized. And I'm sorry to my friends that are in the Green Party. There are some people that are there. I have a couple because they're, you know, they have progressive ideas and some of those do go along with the Green Party. I understand what you're saying, Astrid, and I'm against that kind of regulation, but against that sort of thing. If you're dehumanizing sex workers, then you have a problem. But that's not a good thing. But let me get back to the point about people from the industry regulating things. It's not just that. Bush put people in charge of the things of the industries that they were a part of while they still had stock in those industries.
Well, that's not just endemic of Bush. That's been a Republican constant more or less since the Reagan years where it's and never mind about personal conflicts of interest, they would always just appoint their friends to high positions of management or cabinet level posts. I mean, that's not endemic of one president. It's endemic of the entire party.
Bush did it to a much greater degree than his father or Reagan. I mean, it was a massive conflict of interest. With Cheney having the biggest conflict of interest of all. I mean, they went to war, and he had stock in a company that was involved in war.
Yes, yeah. Yes, he did.
So, of course, now we might go down a rabbit hole of Project for the New American Century, which will sound like conspiracy theorist stuff, but it's not at all. I don't know if you want to go down that road. But
ooh, let's go down that road.
Okay. This was my whole problem with the Clinton campaign or with Hillary Clinton as a candidate in 2008 and somewhat to this in this election as well. I was against the Iraq War before the Iraq War happened. I knew it was the wrong war. I knew about Project for a New American Century before the war happened. They were a conservative think tank. They broke up in 2006. They were around during the Bill Clinton's presidency. And their whole plan, as outlined on their website, which you can find on the Library of Congress's website now, it's archived there. You can go to my page, Rants by Greg Reich. I may just bump that story because I posted the link to the Library of Congress archive of it. Their whole plan, as outlined, was to invade Iraq and spread out to the rest of the Middle East from there to control the oil flow to Russia and China. That was their plan, and they executed it with the political capital they gained from 9/11. I'm not saying 9/11 was an inside job. I'm not a 9/11 truther. I am just saying that they used their political capital to get into Iraq. They pushed that war. They lied us into that war, and Hillary Clinton had to know about Project for the New American Century. She was a Washington insider. These people were in Washington.
I think you're making a little bit too large of a logical leap there. I mean, yeah, it's come out ever since the the 9/11 commission, I believe, that the Bush administration was completely fixated on Saddam Hussein and Iraq from the get-go. I mean, that's not in dispute anymore. But I feel like you're taking this a step too far for even just for just leaving it that simple, that Hillary Clinton is a Washington insider and this was perpetrated by Washington people, therefore she had knowledge.
I don't buy it.
I don't buy it on its face.
If I knew in my home in Michigan, by reading a website for the Project New American Century, a think tank that wrote Bill Clinton and lobbied them actively to go to war in Iraq. Okay, if I knew about it, how in the world did Congress not know?
Because Congress doesn't know everything. And all right, so this is a think tank that lobbied Bill Clinton when Bill Clinton was president to go into Iraq.
These letters are public knowledge.
Yes, he did.
No, he didn't. No, the first Gulf War was H.W. Bush.
Yes, but there was military action in Iraq during Clinton's presidency.
He didn't
declare war in Iraq. Okay, no. What happened with Iraq under the Clinton administration is he had them contained. He had air superiority and he had them contained. Okay, and that's how far it should have ever went. There's no way we should have gone into that war.
I agree with you.
No one's disputing that.
The thing is, this is not top secret information. This was a public website that was there before 2003, before the war started. This website existed from 1998 on. I read this before the war. That's why I was against the war. The whole administration, the whole Bush administration, pretty much, Bush and his advisors were in this think tank. They were part of that think tank. And anybody who did any homework would know that. I'm not privy to top secret information. This was a public website that existed, and it was their whole idea was they wanted American influence throughout the world in the new century. And part of it was invading Iraq and bringing democracy to the Middle East. And it was right there on their website. It's on the Library of Congress site. That website was not a secret. It's not top secret information. It is not a secret conspiracy.
And of course, I'm not a 9/11 truther. I know exactly what happened, and that is Barack Obama went back in time to start the Iraq War because his silky black skin caused global warming because it reflects too much. And then they went back in time and they killed Jesus. I'm pretty sure that's how it happened. And then, of course, they started all the wars with the Jews after they killed Jesus, which, of course, inspired World War II and the fake Holocaust, which brings us back full circle. And it was the time machine that hit the World Trade Center. I'm pretty sure that's what happened.
So, wait, you're saying...
I can't believe that you left out the obviously fake moon landing.
Well, so wait, you're saying that Barack Obama's not secretly a Muslim, he's secretly a Jew?
No, I'm saying he secretly collaborated with the Jews to kill Jesus. Wow. That's what I heard on Fox News.
Wow, he really sucks as a Muslim, man.
Yeah, really. So what we got here, we got about eight different topics there, was was the problem with the Clinton campaign having some insider knowledge and not acting on it, though I would say, at least from what I remember, you know, we're talking 2001 to 2003, where I was in my super liberal fuck Bush without any actual source of information phase. Yeah. And I can fully admit that. I have my live journal to prove it. But
live journals forever.
If I remember correctly, the political atmosphere of the time, it was still in the midst of anybody who criticized anything that the Bush administration did or anything that could have been conceivably connected to 9/11, even if it didn't, was setting themselves up for political suicide.
Oh, yeah, basically.
And that is not to discount the information that you, Greg, are giving. That is not to excuse Hillary Clinton voting for the war, nor John Kerry, or anybody else who did. It's simply to say that it's worth consideration to say that 2002 to 2003 was a really shitty time to try to vote against anything.
Well, that goes back to the political capital I mentioned. He used that political capital to get us into war. He had a 90% approval rating. I was one of the passionate 10%. But there were 90% of the country was behind Bush at the time.
Yes.
It was ridiculous. And I understand what you're saying about committing political suicide, but she actively lobbied in Congress for that war.
Okay. And
I mean, these are things I can't forgive. You know, I could say reluctantly, you know, if they reluctantly voted, weren't vocal, but she was vocal at the time.
Yeah. And
so I can't, you know, I understand what you're saying, but political suicide, she had a lot of political capital herself at the time.
I understand that, but if you also recall, about a year later, one of the candidates for Democratic nominee of president lost his chance at election because he had a funny yell one time. Oh, this was a really stupid time, okay?
Well,
Howard Dean was kicked out of the election for going, and
for
now we have
passionate.
And now we have a candidate for president who openly mocks disabled people and literally everybody else. So I'm only saying that we're having an election with people who are flawed. All of the candidates are flawed. But if we're openly acknowledging who is flawed and what they're flawed about, Hillary Clinton could come out with the voice of Ray Fiennes and start shooting sniper rifles out of windows at random people in only black and white, because for some reason the girl with the little red dress is the only one who gets color.
Oh, now I see the reference you're making.
But, you know, she could do that and still scare me less than Donald Trump.
Yeah, she could even go full Voldemort, and I would still consider her more qualified a candidate than Trump.
I don't know. Well, I mean, she may be qualified, but in my head, Trump's definitely full of shit in regards to most things. This has been well documented. I don't know how much of a threat he is. I know how much of a threat Hillary is. Hillary's policies do in fact have a body count attached. She's done quite a lot of things that I too will not be able to forget.
But so does anybody in a position of world leadership. It's one of those things, it's one of those weird things that idealism has to balance out with pragmatism in order for any kind of elected office to function, or nominated office, or political office to function.
You're trying to get in there, Greg?
Yeah. Here's the choice we have, okay? We have a Machiavellian, and we have a madman. Those are the only two viable choices. Johnson and Stein are not viable choices. I am not voting for either one of them, okay? I have to narrow my vote down to Clinton and Trump. Trump is a lunatic. Say what you will about Hillary Clinton and her policies, I don't think she's insane. I don't think she has a rational worldview, and I say that because she says that her faith informs her policy. I'm not sure how true that is, because I think her faith is only a convenient pandering tool. But Trump is a racist, a misogynist, he's a xenophobe. He talks about banning Muslims. What's that?
Those are just the things that he puts on his resume. I mean, he
sure. I mean, he Saturday night. He has a domestic abuse history against his own ex-wife, and they say in court papers that he raped her.
That was something you brought up, Astrid, right?
Many times. Like, I do have many, many qualms with Hillary, but I'm definitely going to be voting for her this time around. I just, my conscience is not going to rest well with the fact that I'm going to do that after, you know, Super Predator. Like, I'm literally never going to get over that. I am always going to be fucking furious about that.
Well, that's what we're doing. We're making an informed decision knowing that our choices are bad.
Yeah.
And trust me, all of our choices are bad.
Oh, yes, they are.
You know, I wrote something recently, and feel free to weigh in on this, and that is, with the way our system is and the fact that the election starts the day after the last one ended,
pretty much at this rate,
the only people who can make it this long spending this much money and dealing with as much crap as political candidates do, by the time 4 years of saying the same thing at press conferences, having to deal with the press digging into your life and everything else that goes along with running for the highest office in the land, truly all you have left are dangerously insane rich people, because they are the only ones who can afford it. And they are the only ones who can deal with it, because the rational, sane people are going, fuck all of you, fuck all of this, I'm going back to a place where things make sense.
If nothing else, the legacy of Bernie Sanders' campaign is you actually don't need to do that. You can stay completely fixed on public funding and sticking to the issues and still run a campaign to the very, very finish.
Honestly, can you, though? I mean, I have yet to be able to find definitive sources either giving credibility to Election Justice USA or whatever that organization is called. I'd have to Google it to know the exact name. I've yet to find anything either for or against them, but quite a lot of people have studied into the election results, and they're very well. Bernie Sanders very, very well might have actually won the election.
Which I think only serves to prove my point.
Let's put aside, now your point is great. Let's put aside the whole idea of election fraud. If Sanders had had the media on his side in any way, not even his side, they don't even have to take sides, but if the media would have given him the time he deserved.
Yeah.
Then, and if they had not been, they weren't neutral in this. They gave Trump twice the screen time as Clinton and gave Clinton a whole hell of a lot more screen time than anybody else, Republican or Democrat, besides Trump. So if Sanders had gotten the media attention and he hadn't been beaten down in the media over and over again, because if you remember the first several months of his campaign, they weren't taking his campaign seriously. He could have won in a landslide.
Oh no, I'm in complete agreement with you. I'd have to, the one point of hesitance I have is I know people like to pick apart the idea of media bias. And one thing I can recall from, let's say, the 2000 election, Al Franken talked about this in his book, Lies and the Lying Liars Who Tell Them, about the media presentation of, let's say, the supposed media favorability of George W. Bush versus Al Gore. And a lot of it came down to biases that didn't necessarily fall in left or right. The problem that we have with this particular election is we are now several decades into the idea of news media as an asset of corporate media in the macro, where the news media has to generate enough revenue and enough ratings to justify its existence to its corporate owners at this point. It's not a separate entity of its own within a broadcast company's purview. So what we're seeing is with a lot of this coverage of Clinton and Trump, Clinton got a lot of media coverage for the same reason that, right-wing media got in the rise in the early to mid-90s with a bunch of really out-there conspiracy theories revived to attack her again. I mean, I never thought I would get to hear the name Vince Foster uttered on mainstream media in my lifetime again, and then it happened. And then with Trump, you're seeing the fact that he is a tremendous – he is a dumpster fire who walks like a man. So naturally, everyone's going to point their cameras at it because it generates hits. And this is what we're seeing is a presidential election that is borne out largely thanks to corporate media's bias of its commercial media.
Oh yeah, it's infotainment. It's all about the profit now. And Trump says outrageous things, and that gets people watching. And that's, they watch because they hate him. They watch because they love him.
Sort of reminds me of how the casino industry has changed over the years, really. And I say that with complete sincerity. Like Las Vegas, I've heard entertainers speak about this in documentaries and stuff. When the mob ran Vegas, everything was fantastic because they knew they'd give their friends a whole bunch of perks. They'd make up the money in the casino. Not every part of the casino had to make money.
Yeah. And it's fascinating to hear this. It's fascinating to listen to everybody in this conversation who I can only assume comes from a completely different background.
Oh, God.
And
at this point, yeah,
we're having a cross-city conversation, and even though we disagree, we've all disagreed with each other at some point in this conversation, we're still potty trained and not calling names. So
Inciting Incident couldn't keep bringing you commentary, interviews, and fantastic guests without help from you, the patrons. You can support the podcast on a monthly basis at patreon.com/incitingincident which gives you access to many great rewards, including a free t-shirt if you pledge $5 or more. You can also support the show by subscribing, rating, reviewing, and commenting. To contact them about ideas, guests, disagreements, fisticuffs, salmon slapping, rebel rousing, or just plain old tomfoolery, you can email them at incitingincidentpodcast@gmail.com. On Facebook, at facebook.com/incitingincidentpodcast, or yell into a tin cup and hope it's connected to one of our aforementioned string networks. And now, back to the show.
I mean, I can if you want.
At this hour.
Go ahead, Greg.
Oh, I was laughing.
Oh, okay. That's good. So since we haven't done any of that yet, let's insult some people just because I think it would be fun, but not any of us. Not any of us. So I think we need to start with Mike Pence. So,
oh, shit.
Because we
I got my big boy pants on.
We've spent too much time. Well, there is no too much time pointing out what an absurd asshole Donald Trump is. But let's talk about Dick Cheney's less friendly cousin with better aim. Mike Pence. Astrid, feel free to go first. I got a question for you. If you had a vajankle, a pine cone, a raccoon, and fruit juice, and you lure Mike Pence into a mountain, what is the most fun you could have with those four things in a mountain with no consequence?
That sounds like my Tuesday night.
Honestly, I'm not going to put too much thought into this. I feel like shoving the pine cone in his ass and then filling his ass with fruit juice and then sicking the poor raccoon. I'm so sorry to this raccoon. I feel so bad to the adorable raccoon. Just letting him do his thing.
Why does sodomy always have to be the first choice, Astrid? Why?
Have you met me?
Okay, how would the vajankle be employed?
I honestly cannot picture a purpose to the vajankle. However, I think it'd be fucking hilarious to do like some David Cameron-esque blackmail.
Yes.
A point of order. Also, the vajankle is literally fucking hilarious.
And that's the plot to my new screenplay, Bushwhack 2. And that'll be out next year. We're very excited.
Do we get Daniel Stern back?
Of course we'll get Daniel Stern back. Okay, so Greg, it's your turn. And this time I'm going to put you in a desert with Mike Pence, Joe Pesci from Goodfellas, and a laundry list of extremely painful yet non-lethal things you can do.
Boom.
Oh, gosh.
That will eventually end in fatalness because it's the fucking desert.
I'm back. You got me back.
So, okay, Greg, you've got desert, Goodfellas, Joe Pesci, and anything you can do that's extremely painful but not immediately fatal. Which one do you pick, and how does Joe Pesci execute it?
Oh, man. Well, first I'd have Joe Pesci pick up his trusty baseball bat and beat Mike Pence in the shins until they're shattered. That won't kill him, just hurt a lot.
Joe bless you.
Then take some toothpicks or wooden shivs and put them in, under his fingernails and toenails.
Ooh, fun.
Maybe drive a nail or three through his arms. Just, you know, that kind of thing. And then bury him up to his neck and have fire ants eat his head.
All right.
Can we bury him up to his neck in Legos?
Yes.
Suburban Caltrops?
I'm good with that. Okay, Brian.
Yeah?
Your turn.
My turn?
You have the opportunity to place Mike Pence in any first-person shooter as the final boss, and you can use any weapon you want, even outside of the game in question. Which game is he the final boss in, and what weapon do you use?
Oh, I've got a, well, game follows the weapon. I've got to give it to the BFG 9000. if only to leave him, I suppose, right, not dead, not bleeding out, but just writhing in permanent agony as much as possible. When he asks me for the sweet release of death, I'll just say, sorry, it's against my religious beliefs. I got to go for the irony kill on this one.
Absolutely. Okay, Greg, you pick someone to make fun of.
Oh, goodness. Trump's such an easy target.
Yes, he is.
Rick Santorum, he's been in the news lately.
Has he?
Oh, yeah.
Old Adolf himself.
He was talking about how separation of church and state was a communist idea and not one in the Constitution. So, poor Rick. I couldn't hear what he was saying exactly, though, over all of his racism.
Where is that tiny violin? I know I left it somewhere.
I'm actually speechless about Rick. There's just so much to say. I'm not sure where to begin.
Well, I can start with the fact that there's actually a rational answer to the question that Rick postulates, besides the fact that communism wasn't a thing, because when the Constitution was written, it was, what, 70 years before Marx? Anyway, God, we're going to have Andrew Torres on the show sometime soon, and he already explained that in depth of what a precedent is and how directly written in the Constitution is not exactly necessary about, you know, because it's things have been set in precedence with previous interpretations, and we can look into those things because that's what people in judicial systems do.
That's how the common law works.
However, I would like to send Rick into Fire Island with his sweater vest and nothing else. And I'm going to have the people over in the Congo who are enforcing that no lube rule. And I'm going to give Rick, only in his defense, a pineapple and a miniature T-Rex head that he can use only once, Jack Sparrow style, and he has to escape while not uttering any homophobic phrases.
That's gosh. Okay, I'm trying to follow the thread of complexity here.
Well, Rick has to be exposed without any aid and looking ridiculous and somehow escape the gayest place on earth while not saying anything mean to anybody.
Honestly, looking ridiculous, he's got that down pat already, even without the sweater vest.
I know, but it's just so easy.
The guy looks like a, oh God. The guy looks like a Russian nesting doll with nothing nested inside him.
Although, completely off topic, when he was running in 2006 for Pennsylvania State Senate, here's a fun little thing you can look up. He filmed a campaign ad in Pittsburgh in the IWC ring with three people you may recognize, one of them being the new commentator of Monday Night Raw, Corey Graves, wrestling
Matt
in the background.
Oh, man.
Yep.
Really?
And then a fellow WWE alum, John Bolin, walks up behind him, and Rick gives one of those bam punch from behind things because he's going to take a bite out of crime or whatever cliche it was.
When you say McGruff.
Yes, indeed. So, Astrid, Santorum, if you could give Rick Santorum the Google definition of Santorum anywhere in the world, and you can't use Fire Island, I already used that, where would it be?
Honestly, I would like it to be like a really, really, really elaborate porn studio. Like, he's not aware that it's a porn studio, but it's just like a swingers club for like incredibly masculine gay men. You know, the type of gay men where, like, you, because of heteronormativity, you would never know. And you'd be way, way too scared to ask, even if you had a clue.
Is it Bears Night?
Oh, yeah.
Yes!
Motorcycle Bears.
Not that I would know from experience. I have no experience in this matter.
I would like his horror and most likely quite a lot of arousal, very, very confused arousal, to be filmed. I would like to have these films. I need them for reasons.
I'm good with that. Greg, same question.
Where would I put him?
For Santorum. Santorum.
Well, what I would like to do, because I think this would be horror of horrors for him, and I just want to watch him slowly go insane. I want him to go to a gay pride parade and have the LGBT folks give him nothing but love. Just give him nothing but love. Because, you know, just make him look like the asshole, but he will slowly go insane because he can't deal with that. He can't deal with gay people as humans. So I'd love to just watch him lose his mind and that's it. If it goes another way, though, it's a win-win, right?
Like a bisexual.
Thank you, Ted. That was the joke.
Brian, same question.
Oh, gosh. It's so I'd take him to Anthrocon.
Ooh. And those who didn't listen to the Shusion Triple episode, do you want to elaborate on that a little
bit? Anthrocon is Pittsburgh's furry convention. He can make a bunch of new friends there.
Do we get the chipmunk? Tell me we get the chipmunk.
As long as it still wears the sweater vest.
Absolutely. Okay.
It's like the rejected cousin from the Mean Street Posse. Six-person joke.
Indeed. And keeping with the theme of letting everybody pick someone, Astrid, you're up. You get to pick someone to make fun of, and you get to ask the question.
Honestly, I don't have a particular question in mind because people I want to make fun of are a people instead of a person.
Oh, dear.
I am so tired of intactivist shit.
Explain.
So, intactivist is the term for a group of people who are very, very much in favor of seeing to it that the circumcision of children is no longer a thing. However, in their mission to end the circumcision of infant children, they sexualize foreskin. Like, why are you sexualizing a ethical issue that involves children? Why are you sexualizing?
Because it involves the naughty bits.
But I mean, these are the same people who are like, it's so fucked up that people will mutilate the genitals of their children so that it matches their sexual preference. And yet their reason, from what I gathered,
is a sexual preference.
Yeah. Like, are you kidding me? And then on top of that, the vast majority of these people act like circumcision is either like a character flaw or a bodily flaw. So like, not only are they sexualizing foreskin, they're also throwing the people they claim to want to protect under the fucking bus. Now, I personally am against the circumcision of children. I feel like anything that involves changing somebody's genitals, you should go ahead and ask first. Infants can't do that. So I'm against it. Don't get me wrong. But holy fuck, what is wrong with intactivists?
I'm just going to go back to it's because we're talking about pee-pee parts. Really, that we were a nation of three-year-olds when it comes to human sexuality and anatomy, so why not?
Greg, you were trying to say something there?
I remember Astrid's post on that, and I commented because I knew one of these. He was from No Circ. And I, you know, I liked Norm. He was a good guy, but when he got into circumcision, he got into circumcision. He actually suggested that I get surgery to have a foreskin, you know, reconstructive surgery on my penis so that I would have a foreskin. And I said, no, I'm not getting surgery on my penis to appease your activism. I'm against it for children because they can't consent for the, you know, Astrid put it beautifully. I am not going to add foreskin to my penis. I it's fine. I'm okay. You know, I'm not scarred. Well, I'm scarred, but I'm not, I'm not like, you know.
Not emotionally.
Not emotionally. Yeah. I don't have any sort of, you know, misery because I don't have a foreskin. And he says, oh, well, you'd be more sensitive and enjoy sex more. You don't understand how I have sex, Norm. see, the one thing you may or may not know about me is that I am into BDSM. And I am, you know that. But I am a sadist, and as such, penetration really doesn't mean as much to me as it might mean to other people. So,
are you saying that sex exists outside of repeatedly putting a penis into a vagina?
Oh my goodness!
People are prepared for that.
Yeah, it's funny how, you know, missionary in the dark pervades the, you know, sex lives of so many people. There's no creativity. There's no variety. it's amazing. I mean, I don't expect everybody to like what I like, but there's just a world of kink out there. There's a world of exploration out there. There's a world of positions. Get into that stuff. It's not just about the penis in the vagina or the, you know, it's yeah.
Hey. Now, sex lives are meant to be between the man, woman, and the blanket cheating between them with the hole. Stop.
Don't forget Jesus. You forgot hashtag Jesus.
Sex lives matter.
Oh, that was awesome.
Thank you and good night. I have achieved what I set out to do.
Okay, Brian, yes. Since I don't think we could build on that for that specific topic, refurbished foreskin intended. Your turn to pick someone that we can all make fun of before we get back into the serious talk.
Can we just make fun of all of CNN? Because
yes.
CNN is objectively terrible.
Gosh.
Oh, Greg, you get to go first.
Well, okay. I tried to watch the news networks, the 24-hour news networks. I mean, they've gotten progressively worse over the years. CNN is... What's that?
It's corporate media.
That's absolutely it. Yes. It is fluff news. CNN is fluff news. They get things wrong all the time. They jump the gun too much. But the biggest problem I have with them is that they have so many things that aren't news. They're just there for their junk food for the brain. They don't inform us. You will become less informed watching CNN.
Mm-hmm.
It's horrible. And Wolf Blitzer is like I hate him. I hate him.
This is a man who needed to have explained what fettuccine was.
This is a man who scored -4,600 on Celebrity Jeopardy, not part of a SNL skit about it.
And he lost to Nancy Grace! Oh, who knows nothing?
Yeah.
Remember the time when he asked the atheist if she prayed or she was thankful to God for her survival from a tornado?
That moment was objectively awesome for the person being interviewed.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah. It really set him up to look like the fool, but it definitely
he didn't need our help
to look awesome.
Yeah, and Wolf Blitzer is the kid in class who tried to pay you to let him glance off of your spelling test and still got it wrong. So the fact that he's employed at all is pretty amazing. And, of course, Nancy Grace is what happened with all the spare parts of Sarah Palin that the Intactivists got rid of. So you guys are just setting me up for this one. Astrid, you're up.
Honestly, you know, I've got a family member who works at CNN, and he works in one of the, like, daytime early morning shows, and he told me when we first met, because he is, like, a relative by marriage, that in the mornings before the show would start, they would all get together and say, okay, let's not end up on The Daily Show. I don't know what happened to that, honestly. Why is that not the mantra anymore? Why are they just like, it's practically like they're begging to be shamed.
I think they've resigned themselves to their fate at this point.
All right. Brian, you didn't go. So make fun of anybody from CNN that you like.
I can't make, I know he's not on CNN anymore, I don't think, but I can't make fun of Anderson Cooper. His hair's too pretty.
That's true.
Anderson Cooper is the best IMHO.
I've found one person from each of the three major networks, yes, and I'm including Fox News in this, that I appreciate and respect above all else. I've got Anderson Cooper, Rachel Maddow, and Shepard Smith.
I knew you were going to say Shepard Smith. I knew it.
He's the only one with any kind of journalistic integrity on that whole damn network. Of course, I'm going to mention. Of course,
I'm not sure how he has a job there. I know. Don't know how he survives.
I have a theory. Okay, so one night Shepard Smith decided to do some investigative journalism, and he headed down to where Aaron Sorkin was writing The Newsroom, and he found out that everything was going to be about him in the crazy alternate universe where Al Gore was president and Paris Hilton was eaten by wolves. So they were going to compose the story based in that world. And that was going to prevent the 9/11 attacks that Obama was doing back through time. See, I brought it back around.
And he
has blackmail on all of CNN for agreeing to go along with this premise and expose the alternate reality that exists at the same time as this one. That's what I learned from What the Bleep Do We Know. Thank you. Yes, I broke you.
I think something broke in my thinky parts.
Honestly, I'm usually pretty good at keeping up with fucking insane conspiracy theories, but you actually managed to lose me with that one.
Good.
Mission accomplished.
Yes, mission accomplished.
Hashtag mission accomplished. Banner. Bam. I get my own, and I get to be on a warship. Excellent. So,
hashtag Illuminati confirmed.
Exactly.
I like this plan. I'm excited to be a part of it.
Yes, the Illuminati are actually David Icke's lizard people, and that's why they were on that boat. None of those soldiers were real. They were all lizard people.
See, I thought the Illuminati were always a bunch of parasite-infected squid-head people in rural Spain.
Have you ever seen a lizard and a squid in the same place at the same time?
I have not.
Exactly.
Uh-huh.
Exactly.
Where does the Bilderberg Group fit into all this?
Where
does the Bilderberg Group fit in all this?
What's that?
Oh gosh, you don't know about the Bilderberg? Oh goodness, you've never heard Alex Jones?
Oh, it's Alex Jones. Yay! Tell me more.
The Bilderberg Group is one of the groups that is part of the shadow governments that rule the world, and they are always competing with the Illuminati and the lizard people. Come on.
Oh.
They're just heads of corporations that meet in secret and decide the fate of the world, decide who's going to be elected, and decide where the FEMA camps are going to be, and who's going to be shipped off to them, and all that kind of stuff. So that's who the Bilderberg Group is.
Are they the people with the death panels? Because if they're not, they should be.
I'm sure that they would. If Alex Jones talked about death panels, Bilderberg Group would probably be in charge of those. Yes.
Fantastic.
And Alex Jones has never been wrong about anything.
No. Alex Jones is what would happen if we found the cryogenically frozen head of Walt Disney, filled it with Bill Hicks's mind, and then sent it to Fox News for 20 years to indoctrinate and spit out the dumbest shit I could possibly hear. So I actually have an idea, okay? Because we're having fun with hyperbole, but we wanted to get back to one serious issue, I'm going to ask one more roundtable question that everybody can get in on, and I'll start with our guest, Greg. Greg, in the last, I don't want to go forever because that would take forever. Since the year 2000, what is the single dumbest issue brought up in any election?
Oh.
Feel free to rant and be as hyperbolic and indignant as you will, because our hard left Turner is going to kill this one. I know it.
The single dumbest thing brought up in the, oh gosh. You're stumping me on that one. There's a lot of dumb issues. I will tell you that it was really dumb to me that same-sex marriage was made a wedge issue. It's something that harms, if it's made illegal, which it was illegal for how long, it harms people. But if it's legal, it harms no one. But I don't know. That one kind of ties with pot, and it ties with – there's a whole bunch of dumb issues.
There really are.
If you were talking about news, I would say war on Christmas. That's never been an election.
Okay, we can go with that too. That's technically a political wedge issue. Go for it. Say anything you want about it. Go.
The war on fucking Christmas. Oh my gosh, waging a war on Christmas. I know every year, every year I'm sad because I go into stores and they won't wish me a Merry Christmas. They're always like, Happy Holidays, fucker. And, bah fucking humbug on your fucking Christmas.
I got a shot for you shot, dude. This sounds awesome.
And there's never any Christmas trees up until like December 24th. So I have to fucking go in there with loads and loads of people. They're not up in September like they should be. They're up on the 24th, and we all have to rush in and get them. And we have to, like, all the ornaments are picked over if you don't get in there by 6 a.m., you know, because they're not there in September. And, you know, there's no such thing as Christmas in July. It's, you know, only Christmas. It's only that one day, and it's Jesus' birthday. We should be celebrating it all fucking year, man.
I like
and
it.
That's my story.
I like this plan, actually. Make Christmas more fun.
Hashtag make Christmas great again. All right, Brian, anything but the war on Christmas, feel free. Anything that's happened in a political campaign, a wedge issue, or just something stupid, go.
I'm going to go back to something I brought up earlier and talk about the Clinton family as murderers story from the early 90s. Go for it. Oh, gosh. There was Vince Foster is probably the most prominent one, and I'm not even sure he was related to the campaign. He was just kind of a friend of the family who wound up walking out on the train tracks on purpose and staying there. And they tried, and the this is where we coined the term vast right-wing conspiracy, which I have to admit, if there was a conspiracy built around this, it was not vast, but it was certainly very, very large. Tried to make it seem like Bill and Hillary were a tag team snively whiplash tying Vince Foster to the train tracks, where I actually thought that he was stabbed and his body was dumped out on the tracks for the train to hit it. And there were stories of like other aides who tragically lost their lives in various accidents, like one guy who died in a plane crash, and Rush Limbaugh and his ilk were contending that the Clintons had an operative on to assassinate him and then cause the plane to crash to cover it up, because yeah, that's how cover-ups work.
Did they just watch My Fellow Americans and just think it was a documentary?
Honestly, I think My Fellow Americans was kind of based on some of this.
Oh, that would make a lot of sense. Wow. Mind blown.
Yeah, go. I mean, Ken Starr was a big one behind this as well, until they finally nabbed him when the whole Monica Lewinsky scandal came to light. And the Starr report was his attempt to kind of put together a single unifying document of all of the crap they accused the Clintons of over their entire tenure. And what it basically came down to was, I've got nothing but Lewinsky. That's the only legitimate thing that they came up with out of 8 years of trying was Lewinsky.
Okay, Astrid, I know in the year 2000, political issues weren't exactly at the top of your agenda, but any issues since then that you would like to bring to our attention?
I've got one that sort of falls into all of the categories you listed. Fucking political correctness. Why is being kind and respectful even a debate? Like, I'm so sorry that it offends you that I'm gonna call you out or tell you to leave when you're being like blatantly racist, but that's just what people who are concerned with their own moral compass do. Sorry that the world is no longer catering to racists and homophobes and transphobes and Islamophobes. But nobody cares. Nobody cares about your shitty opinions.
It's like everybody in the country wants to be Rand McPherson from PCU.
Yes. And they can't.
And failing to realize that Rand is supposed to be the bad guy.
Yeah. You know, when David Spade talks about the misopportunities of not being able to talk a woman into sex against her will, that's not supposed to be life advice. He's David Spade. You are never supposed to listen to anything a David Spade character says. Or if you're going to be like the media, you're not supposed to listen to anything David Spade says at all. But yeah, well, nobody would have seen his movies if it wasn't for Chris Farley. I'm not going to go there. So I've got one.
All right.
And I think I'm going to go a little more obscure with it. But first, let me ask you a question. Back in 2008, do you remember how many stupid issues were brought up just because there happened to be someone with a silky black suntan running for president?
Oh, you know what? That is something that I explored a lot back then. one of the measures that I took was Snopes. All you had to do was look at how many false things there were about Obama and his family compared to how many things false were about McCain. There were 106 false stories about Obama and his family. There were 5 about McCain, if that gives you any clue. And while we were discussing everything Obama's secret Muslim thing might be one of the dumbest things.
Oh, yeah.
I was thinking that was one of the dumbest. So go on. You have something to say about this, and, you know.
I'm just reminded of a time when Bill Maher brought this up on one episode of Real Time, where it was basically a remember when kind of a thing with people being fixated on his supposed Muslim heritage, and Bill basically brought up, remember when everyone was freaking out about his radical Christian pastor?
Yeah.
My particular topic happens to revolve around this, and that is the moment where someone at a John McCain rally, when McCain was talking about Obama, called out, he's an Arab, and McCain's excuse and supposed generosity toward his opponent and respect was to say, no, he's not an Arab, he's a good person.
Yeah.
Does anybody remember that?
I do. And honestly, even with the patronizing, I'm still willing to give some props to John.
But I don't completely disagree with you, but the press...
No, I understand. The wording was still problematic and loaded with unfortunate implication, but I still think it's not a crowning moment of awesome, it's still a good point.
John McCain.
You are talking about the guy who said, bomb, 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 Iran. I mean, you know...
I didn't say it put him in the positive, I just said it was a good point in his estimation.
Can I rant, please?
Go for it.
Okay, so that in the minds of many, because of the same stupid fight we've been having for the last 8 years, and let's be honest, this fight has been going on longer than 8 years, mm-hmm. established the precedent in many minds that good person and Arab are opposites.
We have the same rant.
Yes. So while I agree that ISIS is terrible and incredibly scary, based on if you've listened to Sam Harris's most recent episode, number 43, about what jihadists really want, where he read straight from the ISIS propaganda machine, mm-hmm. that's terrifying. However, setting up the idea that being an Arab is the definitive idea of what a bad person is, even so much as someone trying to defend a person to say he's not this much of the freaking world, 99% of which are fine, decent people, I'm sure, to say that is the other extreme compared to good person simply encapsulates the mindset of what I find wrong about all of our national rhetoric. And let me explain. We have in this country a group of people whose solution to the problems in the Middle East is nuke them all, who cares?
Yeah.
Then when someone from that area gets a little pissed off and kills some people, we go, why do they hate us? Says the same person who was just casually, non-hyperbolically declaring that we should commit genocide.
It's a wonderful cognitive dissonance.
I remember being in the political atmosphere that was 2003, and I'm going to bring that back because one of the biggest things I remember being seen shared on the LiveJournal, because that was social media back then, was the shape of Iraq, the country, in blue, because we should make it Lake Iraq.
Wow.
Okay. So we in our political discourse, we have to reference Jesus and we have to all be good Christians and we have to all follow along. You know, these are the same people who say all lives matter. These are the same people who are talking about the sanctity of life. However, we have this separate part of the world which has what, a third of the world's population and the second biggest religion in the world. And the same people who are always talking about how important life is, how important it is to treat everybody who matters, how important it is to respect your neighbor, how important it is to be kind to people, turn around and their only instinct is to kill everyone. That, to me, is where the biggest problem that created the monstrosity that is Donald Trump came from. It came from a bunch of people who were convinced that one third of the world is coming to kill them, and the only solution is to be less politically correct and kill them first. I am not surprised that Donald Trump is having success because these are the people he is catering to. PC culture did not create Donald Trump. Setting up a mindset where you need to be a good Christian and pray for everybody while at the same time advocating for genocide is what got us Donald Trump, because that is exactly what he is doing and that is exactly what is resonating with all of the same people who shared the Lake Iraq picture.
Well, to be fair, that existed centuries, millennia before Donald Trump.
Oh, absolutely. I'm talking modern national rhetoric.
I'm still holding on to my Fanon theory that Donald Trump is what happens when you fuse together Ronald Reagan, Richard Nixon, and Newt Gingrich into one being.
I lower
it by about 150 IQ points.
I was hoping you were going to add in Pennywise the Clown, but...
Oh, yes. Okay, so they flout.
So real fast, I want to go back to the John McCain... He's not a Muslim, he's a good person. Comments. Because while the second part of that sentence was horrible, don't get me wrong, I feel like it's frequently overlooked how fucking awful the first half is too. Because when people are asking, or were, or I guess still are, people are still not over this.
No.
When you ask somebody if they are any marginalized group in the form of an accusation, if they say yes, you are forcing them to what will publicly seem like they are confessing to something. And if they say no, they are forced to condemn, like, through semantics, it's definitely implied, they're forced to condemn the group that you have accused them of belonging to. The more that Obama was forced to say, no, I'm not a Muslim, which on its own is a simple fact. But because it was leveled as an accusation, saying, no, I am not a Muslim, became, no, I am not this bad thing, instead of, no, I'm not this qualifier of human being.
I think you're making an argument about decorum in general, because, yes, that would
I am a slut for linguistics, so, I mean, I make a lot of those.
And I would just like to add that puppies suck and yay, cancer! We're having fun!
Jesus.
All right, so Greg, final question. Before we get to it, because we've gone way over time, but that's all right because we won't be here for a while and we're going to record a bunch of episodes in advance. Greg, it's been a while since we've talked to you. It's been a while!
You knew it! Beat me to it!
Since we've had you on the show and we had sort of our political discourse roundtable, how have you been finding blogging about these political things? And have you seen any recent dramatic shifts on topics and reception?
Well, what I've seen after Bernie endorsed Hillary is I saw a lot of people that were heavily critical of Hillary. Yeah. Become cheerleaders for her. And I don't understand how that works. I can understand resigning yourself to that vote. I can understand trying to find the positives and working with those. What I don't understand is how rabid some of them have become. I have I have not, maybe I'm posting more than I realize I am. I don't feel like I'm posting as much as I used to on politics because this election for me sucks. I know we can't have Trump in office. But I hate this election so much right now.
That's fair.
And for those who may not be familiar with your work, because believe it or not, since we had Eli Posnick on the show, we've gotten a lot of new customers and patrons. If people want to follow your work, Greg, where can they do that?
I've been keeping up with It's Expensive to Be Poor. That's one of the pages that I do. And Rants by Greg Reich. Those are the ones that I keep up with the most.
All right. Now, we have one final thing to do here, and that is a patron reward, because I did some video editing work, and he insisted it be paid, and I insisted that they do that through Patreon. And even though it isn't official yet, we are going to give our first patron reward to the guest from episode 50 himself, Eli Bosnick.
Eli!
So here's my question for the panel. We'll go Greg, Brian, Astrid, and then me.
All right.
Wish Eli Bosnick a happy wedding day, which will be the day this airs, August 19th, in a way that only Eli Bosnick could appreciate. Greg, go ahead.
I feel put on the spot. Can you go first?
All right, Brian.
Congratulations on acquiring your brand new ball chain, handcuffs, and whip, the Eli Bosnick story.
Astrid?
Honestly, I am not familiar enough with Eli's sense of humor to be able to do this properly, but in the short time that I've been exposed to him, I have gone from being skeptical to seeing what a dirty SJW like me he really is. And honestly, I wish him all the best, and I hope that he and his betrothed anger all of the bigots that they can.
The short time I've been exposed to him, the Eli Bosnick story. All right, Greg,
your fiance and I were quite exposed to him the other day.
Greg, you want to give it a shot now?
Well, according to the words I've heard from Astrid and Brian, I would say that he's my kind of people, and I would imagine any life partner he'd be with is also that kind of person, and I hope that I hope they keep fighting the good fight, and they fight it together, happily, for many years.
And I know I've ranted about it enough, but Eli is the reason I'm here doing this, and the fact that I got to talk to him on our 50th episode is surreal. But what is more surreal is a story I shared on Facebook today, and that is someone tweeted at me, and it said, "Sitting in my Mechanicsburg office, it is so surreal to hear Al Lehman and Eli Bosnick talking to each other." And my curiosity got the best of me, and I tweeted back something along the lines of, "Do we know each other?" And he's like, "I discovered your show through Thomas Smith." Uh-huh. I was like, "Okay, great." Andrew Torres also heard that interview, so that's part of the reason that we got that interview set up next month.
Very cool.
But through tweeting back and forth, it's like, okay, here's a guy who lives in the area, mm-hmm. has heard of our show, follows our show, and likes our show.
I'm sorry.
Besides that, and is not someone that I had to badger into listening to it in the first place.
Oh, dear Lord, we're growing organic listeners.
And on top of that, it turns out, not only did this guy remember me from Suncoast once I told him who
oh,
I was.
God in heaven.
But I went to high school with him.
Oh.
And we ran in the same circles, so we have a bunch of mutual friends.
Cool.
So this guy said his name as if it would be something I wouldn't remember, and it was like, Oh, yeah, I remember you. We hung out. Okay? This is someone from CV, the place where Donald Trump went in and would be one of the less offensive people in the school.
Yeah, where he threw out the baby.
Yeah. And somehow, 15 years later, he finds our show from 5 miles away and doesn't realize it's that crazy dude he went to high school with.
To be fair, that's kind of the usual trope that you don't realize it's the crazy guy you went to high school with.
Indeed. But the whole point of that story is the fact that when Ryan, hey, what's up, dude, saw this, he said he immediately jumped to the Eli Bosnick episode when he finally got our updated RSS feed and was listening to that. But the fact that he put me in the same reference as Eli Bosnick was something that totally made my day. And Eli Bosnick is someone who has been making my day at least twice a week for the past 7 months. So I want to say, Eli, I'm here because of you. It's up to you to decide whether or not that's a good thing. But you and Anna have done so much for my life, my inspiration, and have made me a better person for knowing who you are.
Cue the Peter Cetera music.
Yay. So every time you tell a story about Anna being forced to watch Christian movies, I laugh. Every time she writes a song, it's hilarious. Every time you guys do a thing, I'm better for having heard it, and I'm also better for having had the chance to have many conversations with you, only one of which was recorded. So we are going to spend the next 50 episodes or so earning that patron reward, even though you're giving it to me for doing a service.
All right.
So with that, we're going to wrap episode 54 up. This is going to air on Friday, August 19th. And best wishes, Eli and Anna. We look forward to having you back. And Greg, thanks for coming on the show.
Oh, absolutely. Anytime.
All right. So Brian, Astrid, anything left?
No. I'm exhausted. It's been a long couple of days, but this episode has brought me a lot of much-needed ranting, so by extension, catharsis. Good episode, everybody.
Though I am curious, what is the duration of time that has passed that it's been since you've been able to rant?
5.5 minutes?
Less than that. See, the difference is ranting with like-minded people who I care about and respect. That's fun. Ranting to people who have just pissed me the fuck off, that's exhausting.
But you missed my tee up for the joke. So would you say, it's a bit wild!
Sorry. No, she wouldn't. Not everybody can be your brother-in-law, Morgan.
Damn. But he's in Pennsylvania now! Yay!
Oh, goody.
And by the way, if you don't know this yet, I'm getting married Sunday!
Woo-hoo!
Yay!
So episode 55 will air on that day, and I will be far drunker than any of you having to listen to that show when it finally airs. So good night, everybody. All four of us will be there in addition to everybody else in this room, which has, what, 7, 8 people? Yeah,
ish.
All of us will be there.
Ish, yeah.
Yeah, if we include the cats. So good night, everybody. Thanks for listening.
Driving up toward Green Bay, then east, the sun's in the rearview mirror. We both had some pretty tough weeks, white knuckles try to steer. A few more miles, there's no telling what we'll find. All we gotta do is take a little time. We all gotta find our own ways to love and hope and breathe again. Some that just happens to be on the shores of Lake Michigan. can't explain the way a city grips your mind. All we gotta do is take a little time for you and me and the moon and Lake Michigan. Flow right in and hair rocks and vanish from our sight. Kinda like those troubles that wash away quicker in the moonlight. This crazy old world's got no reason or rhyme. All we gotta do is take a little time for you and me and the moon and Lake Michigan. Little to no chance for all that stormy weather, no. It appears conditions won't get much better for you and me and the moon and Lake Michigan. Sometimes this old world seems much worse than it should be. Couple days later, you're sitting and thinking how lovely. I won't question the scope or design. All I gotta do is take a little time for you and me and the moon and Lake Michigan.